Penguin Random House Audio presents Our Towns, a 100,000-mile journey into the heart of America, written and read by James Fallows and Deborah Fallows. This is Deborah Fallows.
For our next generation, Jack, Tide, Eleanor, Navy, this is your country. Author's note. This book is the story of journeys that took place over more than 4 years, from preliminary and planning trips late in 2012 through our final cross-country travel at the start of 2017. Our goal has been to portray the people we spoke with and the places we visited at specific moments in time. Time has not stood still in any of these cities, and inevitably circumstances have changed from what we originally saw. Some people we interviewed have changed jobs, retired, gained or lost political office, moved to different parts of the country. At least one of them has died. Many of the businesses we describe have grown and prospered. At least two of them have failed. Cities and their populations have gone through political and cultural changes, some for the better, but not all. In a few important cases, we have noted these changes, but for the most part, we have left our account faithful to what we saw and heard when we were on scene. This account draws on extensive notes we made each night while on the road, a practice based on the belief that we'd remember and capture impressions more vividly during the same day than ever afterwards. It also draws on reports we posted along the way on the Atlantic's website and on later follow-up interviews. Reflecting this mix of reporting over an extended period, some of the narrative is left in present tense, describing what we saw at the time, for instance, the downtown is recovering. Other parts are in past tense, for instance, the mayor told us. For most of the cities we describe here, we made two or even three reporting visits, initially to get our bearings and then to follow leads or observe specific events. Usually those trips were only a few weeks apart. A few were separated by months. For clarity, we've combined the results of these separate trips in our accounts of each town. In one case, we discussed findings of a later journey to Louisville in 2016 in a sequence of earlier reports because of the thematic connections. Alternating sections of the book are written by me, James Fallows, and by Deborah Fallows. We'll each read what we wrote. Redlands, California, 2018.
Introduction, 2017, A Last Trip West. Montgomery County Traffic, Cirrus 435 Sierra Romeo, taking runway 14, VFR departure to the west, Montgomery. And with that, we were off, flying away from frigid Washington, D.C. and its political post-election turmoil, on a southerly route to California. We had flown nearly 100,000 miles in nearly 4 years in our small plane, with Jim as pilot and me in the right seat. We began in my home territory of the upper Midwest, then headed over to Maine and flew south through New England and the mid-Atlantic states to Georgia and Florida. We swept farther through the deep south to Texas and the southwest, up the Central Valley of California to Oregon and Washington, and closed the loop after leaving Montana. All the while, we snaked in and out of the so-called flyover country, through Wyoming, Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, West Virginia, and much more. We've landed in dozens of towns and cities along the way, anticipating in each of them the local stories that would organize themselves into some kind of composed narrative about the backbone and character of the region, and maybe beyond that, to help explain the character of the country. We began by looking for towns with positive energy, with signs of rebound from some kind of shock or shift, like a mine or factory that had closed, or waves of people who'd departed, or newcomers who'd arrived. We ended up adding towns with down-and-out reputations where we truly feared for what we might find. Life upon landing was never quite what we'd planned. We have stayed in towns for weeks at a time. We've often revisited them, following threads from one person or one group or town institution or movement to the next, settling into the local rhythm. We've gone to town plays and musicals, sat in on civic meetings, hung out at coffee shops and brew pubs, spent days at schools, libraries, and ballgames, taken tours of downtowns, visited factories, startups, and community college classes, taken boat rides and bike rides, swum in local public pools and run on high school tracks, borrowed cars and stayed in motels, private homes, and one-off eco-hotels. We remained long enough to begin to imagine how much we didn't know, but also to appreciate the unusual opportunity we've had in seeing a broader sampling of modern America's realities than most of its citizens will ever have a chance to do. This time we were heading to Jim's hometown of Redlands, in the orange-growing country of Southern California, to write this book. Our final flight west would mark both a leave-taking from frenetic Washington, D.C., and a homecoming. After so many miles, we knew that flight in a small plane is rarely routine. There are dramas when you're airborne. Weather, birds, parachute jumpers, mechanical blips, crop dusters and drones. And perspectives unfold among the clouds or over the sights below. Rangy forests, tamed farmlands, strings of quarries, hours of desert, well-defined prisons and pop-up small towns. Our departure was not auspicious. Cold, wind, snow, and icy conditions in Washington gave us a few more days to organize at home and winnow the next 6 months' belongings into the 140 extra pounds the plane could carry, besides us and a lot of fuel. Clothes, flight gear, electronics, emergency supplies, water, books, a little food. By now, I knew travels with Charlie the way some people know the Bible, and I was more than a little envious that Steinbeck could stock his trusty outfitted truck Rocinante without limit, including what he described as far too many clothes and a week's worth of food plus liquor. Steinbeck could pack quadruple what he needed until Rocinante's springs overloaded, but if we did so, we would never get off the runway. Tuesday was still a blustery 29 degrees outside, but the clouds were high enough that we could fly below them without worry about ice forming from their moisture collecting on our wings. We bundled into clothing layers so thick that I had to loosen my seatbelt, a complex system of straps not unlike those in toddlers' car seats. I stretched my headset to fit over a heavy knit cap. Jim unplugged the plane's engine from its overnight warming station. After all that, the sound of the motor turning over quickly, and, I would add, proudly, was our signal. The air traffic controllers, ATCs, my heroes of the sky, guided us through the busy Dulles airspace on a shortcut south. We were ready for headwinds, but not the strong 40 to 50 knots straight at us that slowed our ground speed from the accustomed 170 knots, about 200 miles per hour, down to as low as a measly 109. I was grateful for my natural sea legs, dating back to a childhood pounding over waves in small sailboats, which translated well to the bumps from gusty winds aloft. In autumn, if we flew north, we would watch the green leaves near the Mason-Dixon line fade to yellow, then pivot to a bright orange and red, until the foliage all but disappeared over northern New England. On this trip, the snowpack over Virginia melted thinner into the Carolinas, then gave way to dry land just south of Greenville. Clipped diction from the ATCs along the busy eastern seaboard slowed to a more languid drawl, and outside the temperature began inching up. We flew over Georgia's catfish farms and the erratic geometry of forest clearing, chasing the late afternoon sunset into Demopolis, Alabama, our destination. Jim had spent a good part of the summer of 1968 around Selma, Montgomery, and Demopolis as a teenage cub reporter for a civil rights newspaper called the Southern Courier. We wanted to give the town at least a quick look. Morning in Demopolis was downright balmy. In the Best Western breakfast room, Miss Nettie was making grits and biscuits for us and the out-of-town crews who had come in to monitor the planned outage at the cement factory. Two small things stood between us and our progress west. One was a problem with our onboard weather system. The software wasn't communicating to bring in the weather updates. Before this technology existed, we'd flown without radar depictions of the weather, but once you've had new tools, It's hard to go back, especially with some iffy weather forecast.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?